right, guys, so marriage, ministry, and family. Rita and I have been in ministry for about 35 years. Longer than that. Well, not much longer than that. In ministry?
Yeah.
No, I haven't been in that long.
Okay.
Around 38 years I've been in ministry. 35 years, as you guys know, we have two children, Carrie and Ashley, and most of you know both of them. Two in-laws, a daughter-in-law and a son-in-law who are as committed to the cause of Christ as our kids are, and are as much a blessing to the ministry. And so we have, that's the immediate, and then six grandkids. And we are super active in ministry, and we're super active with our kids and super active with our grandkids. And so it's been amazing to see what God has done. I think, you know, it's been by the grace of God. No doubt that, you know, without God, we would not have been able to do this. But I do have some convictions about how you can deal with your family in a way that allows you not to be viewed as this person who is, you know, loves your ministry but doesn't like them very much. So you guys are probably, you know, already, if you've been in ministry, whether you're in ministry full time or whether you're in campus ministry and you're married, you can already begin to feel some of the tension and some of the conflict that can go on. So we're just going to throw it up, and unless, Reed, you have anything you want to say? Anything, any questions, anything you guys want to talk about? All right, it's been a nice form.
Okay, I had a question. So me and Hannah were talking about this actually at dinner, and you, Maria. But we were talking about, like, how it's a worry for, like, us to have kids, like, when they're older, obviously, in the church, because we don't want them to be those spoiled, like, church kids or, like, necessarily not know what the world is, like, go out and go crazy, like, party, because a lot of times you see that in, like, a lot of church kids, even with good families. So, like, we were just, like, I guess I was just kind of wondering, like, how to go about that in a better way than, like, so that my kids don't end up doing that.
Any thoughts?
I think one thing, just making the church life attractive to our kids, where they are involved. I mean, our kids have been involved in ministry from the time they were, like, little bitty. You know, they would follow us around or be with us, and I can remember leading Bible studies and Ashley being there and her memorizing scriptures as we memorized scriptures, and they were just a part.
That we didn't even know.
That we didn't even know. Yeah.
Rhea would be studying with somebody, and later on Ashley would come around the corner and talking literally 2.5 or 3 years old, and she would be able to quote some of the scriptures in our studies. Where did you learn that? We never sat down, but she just picked up on it.
Right. So they were just, I mean, they were a part of our ministry wherever we went, whether it be church camp, seminars, everything. They were always a part of the ministry, and as much as we were, honestly.
And I think one thing, if you teach them early on that they have a purpose in it, most church kids don't have a purpose, quite frankly. They are there because that's what their parents did. But especially in evangelistic churches. Evangelistic churches are incredible safeguards for your kids. If you teach your kids to be evangelistic, in Philemon, Paul wrote and said, I pray that you be active in sharing your faith so that you'll have a perfect understanding of every good thing you have in Christ. That's a verse that we don't quote very much, but what Paul seems to be saying is that when people are active in sharing their faith, it makes them appreciate where the good things that they have. So our kids, you see, when people are growing up, all they see is the glitter of the party life. If they're church kids who we keep isolated from the world, which is what the goal of many church parents are, let's keep them isolated. So all they see is the glitter and the fun that everybody else seems to be having. What our kids saw very early on, because they were reaching out and because of the people that we were constantly having around them that we were reaching out to, they saw the seedy side of sin. They saw what happens. They saw addicts. They saw divorces. They saw abuse. They heard about things. And so it really did knock the sheen off of that kind of lifestyle. And so then when you couple that with just being a family that's committed to just being loving and making, like Rita said, making your family life special. And guys, you get with your kids, you've got to know you're their primary faith builders. And man, from the time my kids were tiny, and the same thing with my grandkids, I am constantly reaffirming them and dreaming for them and telling them how awesome I think they are and how wonderful they're going to be and how I can't wait to see what God's going to do in their lives. And so I think there's that reaffirmation that you do when they're growing up. Make sure that you keep them, you stay active in sharing your faith, but teach them to reach out to the people around them that are their friends, because inevitably what they will find is they're going to reach out to a friend whose mom or dad's an alcoholic, who started partying when they were in high school and now beats their best friend. And they're going to go, I don't want to end up there. And they will connect the dots, not because you force it, but because they have to be absolutely blind to not connect. Protect them, you try that, and I guarantee you, you will give them that idea. I can't wait to get out and try this on my own. But my, our kids.
And that's one thing. His mother wanted to pay for our kids to go to a Christian school, a Christian academy in St. Louis. And Alton was known as, ooh, that's a bad area. You're really going to let your kid go to Alton High School or Alton Schools and blah, blah, blah. And she was pretty forceful. You know, I'll pay. I want them to go to a Christian school. And we're like, no. If they can't learn how to stand up for what's right, to stand up for God and have the courage and the faith, then what are they going to do once they get out of that Christian school? What are they going to do? Oh, okay, I'll send them to a Christian college. No, we're not going to do that. That's not how we're going to raise our kids. And our kids were very courageous. I mean, they were more courageous than either one of us ever were.
I grew up being a coward, literally still. It's something that I fight all the time from those times to where all the horrible, you know, kind of world and, you know, that was out there. And I remember telling my mom, I said, Mom, maybe, you know, I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send our kids into the school, and they're going to go in knowing that they're not just going to school, they're going into a mission field. And their role is not to simply go there and try to stay unaffected by the world. They're going to go there, and they're going to disrupt the world. They are going to be soldiers of Jesus on that campus, and we're going to teach that from kindergarten on. And I said, in 18 years or so, Mom, you may be able to say, that was the wrong thing. But you tried raising me and isolating me and thinking that if you shut my eyes at everything that was evil, and if you covered my ears when anything came up, that somehow that was going to protect me, and it didn't. I was a coward. I never shared with my friends. I always thought the gates of hell are battering against me, even though that passage of Scripture says that the heavens are battering against the gates of hell. The gates of hell will never prevail over it. What's that? It's not going to be able to stop us. And so we, with Carrie and Ashley, from the time they were in kindergarten, they went with a mission. If you look at Carrie and Ashley's kids, whether it's Kennedy, or whether it's Jackson, or whether it's Lincoln, or whether it's Ashley's kids, Malachi, or whether it's Gabriel, or whether it's Odessa, all six of them go into their schools with the same mentality. And quite frankly, they're not old enough for me to go, see, it works. But I'm telling you, out of those six kids, at least four of them are already showing signs of incredible boldness that was beyond anything that I ever experienced in my life growing up. So there's a holistic approach. You've got to have a good family. Your marriage needs to be strong to where they're seeing you love each other. You need to make sure they're instilling faith in the value of God. You need to commission them to go into the world as a soldier of Christ, and whenever they go in, start reaching out to their friends, connect with the parents, and don't be afraid to let your kids know whenever, you know, well, when they say, oh, yeah, she says his mama comes home drunk. Don't be afraid to say, listen, you know, you never had to worry about that because we follow Christ. You don't have to, you're building in a protection. And if they see what Carrie and Ashley, and Reed and I aren't perfect at all, but Carrie and Ashley would both say that when they looked at us, that we are what they wanted to be. And our family is what they wanted to have. And so they already had a draw for whatever reason or delusional, you know, affection to us, I guess. But then on top of that, they did see we didn't protect them from those things. We used the exposure to let them know this is what happens when you don't follow Christ. And they lived to this moment with that conviction.
And I think you have to be ready to have your home open to, it's a mission field too, you know. They're out in the world, they're reaching out to kids that are struggling, that are hurting, that are from drug addicted families. Our home became their friends' homes, you know. They lived with us, a lot of their friends, most of the time. It was their safe haven, it was where they could come. It's where they saw a difference, you know. They love being a part of the devotional time, you know. They love the talks we had. They got to see us fight, too. You know, they got to see all of this, but then they saw us work it out. Totally different from what they grew up with. And so I think that's important, too, that you can't be selfish. You're going to have to open your homes up to.
Well, again, and it's part of them a lot, it was really cool just recently. One of the girls that I was really close to is a girl named Mishai, one of Ashley's friends, lives, grew up in the projects. And Mishai is still, you know, she became a follower, then kind of walked away and stuff. And we lost contact with her for years. But Mishai could tell you what sin does. When the whole Ferguson thing came up, she contacted us. We reestablished contact with her. And she shut down her Facebook account because most of her black friends were saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the white friends were saying this. And she got so frustrated, she said, Robert, she calls or texts me or something. She goes, I know, and she goes, she came to visit. She said, Robert, I know this can work. She goes, I tell everybody it can work on both sides. She goes, I know it can work because I saw you guys. And before that, and so we got to see whenever she OD'd in high school, and they were wanting to call the cops, the ambulance, she won't let them call the ambulance. You know who she wants to call? The only person that will let them call is me. So I go over there, and she is out of her mind. And she remembers that night to this moment, and so does my daughter, who watched her, this girl that she exposed to Christ, rejected, and she sees in her doing the same thing. Before that, when we made contact with her again for the first time in years, it was really cool. And I don't think I had appreciated how much affection she had for us and for me as a dad figure. But she hugged Ashley, and she hugged Rita, and then I hugged her, and she just puts her head on my shoulder and just starts crying. I look later, I get a Facebook post from her, and she has a picture of our old house, and she says, this is the place where I learned to love. Guys, so that whole exposure thing, people go, parents, I've never saw a parent that protected their children from that, that was effective as a person who would intentionally expose them to that, both as outreach and for teaching. Sin has a fatal flaw. It only lasts the pleasure for a season. So if they get to see somebody who is rejecting God over the long haul, they're going to get to see the pain of that. So, you know, guys, just remember that. You do need to, there's a lot of little factors that are in there. Your hypocrisy will destroy your kids if it's not real. Your relationship, and when Sharita says they saw us fight, they never saw us in full-blown fight. They knew we were angry, they knew we were fighting, but we would never fight in a really aggressive style in front of them. We just wouldn't do it. We always let them know if we were bothered. And we would say, listen, your mom and I are really bothered with each other right now, but you don't have to worry. Marriage has that happen. We'll talk it out, and everything's going to be cool. So don't, you know, we want you to know, because we want them to be real. So make sure you're being honest. Make sure you're walking the Christian walk. You're not just calling for it. But, man, the greatest thing you can do is to teach them and mobilize them for doing it. Have them reach out to some kids in their school. Say, when you see somebody that's alone and isolated, you find them. You start reaching out to them. And inevitably, what they will find is sin has a flaw, and they will connect it with a lot of stuff that happens in high school. Pregnancy, before you're married. Talk to a lot of single moms and how they started. Drinking and drugs, let the alcoholics and the drug addiction prove the point that God has that sin is flawed.
I hope I say this the right way. So me and my wife, we're a new family, about 6-month-old, and I want to know how you balance. I just had her for the last 2 hours for like the first time, and it was rough, and made me think about how she's with her all day, and I go to work, and then she ministers like 6 times a week, and she stays home, takes care of the baby, but also does ministry. How did you balance that to where you could take stress off her, but still kind of be able to take a load off yourself from coming from a long day?
I put Rita in a padded room
pretty much.
With the kids. Now, I think one of the things that you're dealing with, probably some of the most stressful times you deal with the kids, whenever they're that small and they're not able to articulate, and you expect them to cry, and you expect them to be a disruption in things, and you know, honestly, it's all give, 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 and they're not yet able to return that. So it's a period that can be tough. One of the things that we did do lots of times whenever I went someplace, if I was driving someplace, I'd say, hey, you want to go with me? And our kid, when you put him in a car seat and drive down the road, would fall asleep or just would like them. And so, and now there were times whenever they wouldn't, and they're screaming, and I'm thinking, you know, could we snatch this, you know, car going by and place it in there real quick? They'll find us sooner or later, you know. But so some of it was just that idea of making sure that, you know, that I when I was going places, that I was there. Also, I think having times to where, you know, you have moments to where you're alone, if you can get it with a babysitter, or, you know, sort of partner with some other people who have kids and say, hey, let's trade off and we'll do that. And then Rita was just really, really good with the kids. I mean, she was really, really good with them, and I think handled that really well. What do you think?
I was just thinking.
Because I hate you.
In ministry, it can, even as they get older, you know, it can be stressful. And, you know, we had to have, there were times we had to have talks and say, you know, I'm feeling like he was so busy, he'd be out up till 2 in the morning, especially when we were working more with college students. And they would be at our house till 2 or 3 in the morning, and I would be trying to get the kids to bed. So, you know, we would just make sure we had devotional times together, even with the college students there, or whoever was at the house was welcome to join in on our devotional, putting the kids to bed, and they loved it. They will say, I grew so much then, I learned so much during this. So we kind of still did that together, but we also made sure, with ministry being so crazy, we knew we had to have a family time. What we called it, and ours was on Friday night, and it was kind of like everybody knew off limits there, unless it was something huge, you know. Yeah. That was
we
our
do a funeral, but that's
yeah, but that was our family time.
Weddings and, are not important. And like, don't call me unless you're dead.
And being in ministry, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so sometimes just being at home together, locking the door, not answering the phone, not answering the door, and just watching a movie or whatever, just to be with our family, you know, just to have a family time. Because with ministry being so crazy, a lot of times you need that time too with your family.
And then as you progress, one of the things for all of you, the Bible says that we are the trainers of our children, the discipline. The book of Hebrews says that if we don't discipline, then really we make our children illegitimate. Because God basically says a fatherless child or an undisciplined child really doesn't have any purpose or security in life. And so as you also, you have to learn to where you set boundaries with your kids also for their good. So you discipline to where, you know, a kid will rule your life if you let them rule it, and they will be absolutely out of control. Now, there are some times when you got that baby in the diaper and they're wet and they've been in the car or in your house and you're doing things and they're crying, and there is nothing you can do about that. But we've all been in stores and we saw the 5-year-old or the 4-year-old who rules the family, throws a fit, and I guarantee you that's not just in the store. If he does it at the store, it's hell at home, and they probably don't go to church because they're too embarrassed. So there is a role that you play in making sure that there's things that you can do. Rita was really good during her studies. Ashley would be there, and she'd be having a study, and Ashley would sometimes, when Ashley was 5 or 6, there's times I can remember her sitting there trying to take notes with a pencil when she could barely write. I remember some notes she tried taking, which are really cool memories for me. But Rita would, I remember having her some toys set out when she was probably a year and a half, 2 years old, maybe a little older than that, 3 years old. And she would let her play right there, and she trained her over time that, hey, here's what you do. You can sit here. She obviously, there's going to be interruptions with a 1.5 or 2-year-old. That's what 1.5 or 2-year-olds do. You know what I mean? That's a good thing. They're alive. But you do know, okay, I need to discipline and make sure that I don't let them, you allow them in their natural expression before they know. But when they know all of a sudden that they're throwing a fit to try to manipulate you, that's where discipline comes in. When a baby's hurting, when a baby needs something, when a baby is ignorant, when they're super young, all of that's just expected, but that ends fairly early on. If you look at the Amish people believe in beginning to discipline their child at about a year old for things, for behaviors. And, you know, again, and they, by the way, they spank, they take the Bible very literal in that, and we have this notion that, well, if you use physical, you know, pain on your child, you're going to teach them to be violent. Yeah, that Amish people, they're a really nasty kind of violent.
Have you watched the Mafia?
No, they are the most less crime for violent crime per capita of any segment of our society. I think that that's tied back, and I'm not suggesting you buy a buggy, you know, and you know, a whip or whatever, unless that, anyway.
I just have one more. When we are at events, like we have our cross channel Tuesday nights, and me and Cream run that, but I have to do a lot of stuff, like meet guests and set it up and everything like that. She has the baby for almost the whole night. How do you take time out to be able to, like, help her or to notice? Or
she walks over and hands you the baby, and you talk while you're talking to the guys.
And she's right. She
and then the baby
way.
Cries.
And
it's
there was time, like, she would come to me and she'd say, take her.
I have to talk to the girl.
I can't handle this. But one thing also, use the people that are, you know, sometimes the greatest disservice we do is we do everything ourselves.
Right.
And so in all of our ministries, I mean, we've always had this idea that, that this is our family that we're with. And we honestly had people, you know, with you know, Ashley and Carrie both when they were little, to where they just naturally would grab them and take them, and we weren't offended by that. You know, there's times whenever, you know, the baby'd start, and I'd give Rita that look of like, need to take this kid out, because we were quick with that. But sometimes before we could even get out, somebody else would grab the kid and be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're thinking, does that bother you? No, it doesn't. That bothers them. Praise God, it's not us. I'm okay with that. Let's go for it. But it, but you have to be intentional also. You know, the baby cries, then you need to learn how to be the parent who learns to comfort also. We was somewhere the other night with a baby who was crying, and he's crying everywhere, and I took the baby, and just began, and the baby didn't know me very well, it was Ezra. And I took her and just took him and just began to gently just bounce him a little, began to sing in his ear. I haven't, you know, bounced a baby and sang in his ear consistently for, you know, since Carrie was like 26. But he's always been but anyway, honestly, the baby calmed down, because there's things that are soothing about cuddling a child and really caring about the child. I really do, you know, and you can learn that. And some dads were just like, I'm not good with babies. Well,
get good.
If you don't learn to be good with babies, you're going to be bad with teenagers too, probably.
And I'm good with her. She's.
Well, I think in ministry, just remembering that it's her ministry too. It's your ministry, but it's her ministry.
Yeah.
She's working with the girls, you're working with the guys. And so she's going to need that time too to be able to work with them. So, you know.
Our girls are really sure good about taking her.
That's cool. We go to church camp now, and I'm teaching a lot. Rita usually teaches a class or two. But she, for years, her job has been that she's the babysitter for us, Carrie and Ashley or so. And she goes intentionally to do that. But this year she was like, man, it is so nice for them to be, because now Ashley's kids, Ashley had trouble getting pregnant, was really worried, was she going to be able to have kids? And then she had trouble stopping getting pregnant. And so
every
it's like,
year for 3 years.
You know, what is this? It's like rabbits. But she had three under three. You know, and three under three. One, and it would, you know, one, two, and three. So the 3-year-old is able to completely disrupt the 2-year-old. The 2-year-old is able to completely disrupt the 1-year-old. The 1-year-old can't do anything about it but take you out on you. And so this year, Rita was like, man, it was so much easier this year because they are now 7, 6, and 5, right? Or is that it?
6, 7, 8.
And that, so many things they could do on their own. And because they're a part of ministry, all you guys know, Carrie and Ashley's kids are like the church's kids. They just, everybody knows them. They're just like, ah, Malachi, what's going on? Gabriel, he's our social guy. Now, he'll walk, since the time he's been 2 or 3 years old, I was with him one time, and he has this, he's prejudiced about black people. He sincerely believes every black person is wonderful. He really does, because some of his best friends of the young guys in campus ministries have been around are black. And so I was at this, I don't know, somewhere near a bus stop or something, there's this big old burly black guy, maybe in his 50s or 60s, and Gabriel just walks up to him and grabs him and goes, hi! And the guy goes, hi there, little fagger, and he puts his arms around his leg, he goes, I hug your leg.
I hug your leg. And
the guy's like, fatty one, and he just shook his head, and he goes, that's fine, little fella, and you can just see. But, you know, some of that they've learned from being social, but what I'm saying is there are times they will not stay this age forever. And there will come a time whenever, right now, you'll go, ah, that's a joy. There'll come a time when you'll lament that. You go, man, if only, you know, I could have that back for a little bit. But you're in, honestly, the ages of those that are very little, you're in the most difficult time, unless you don't learn to discipline them. Then you'll have hell to pay later on, okay? So make sure you guys are loving your children the way the Father loves you, and allow discipline and the pain to be a part of that process. Encouragement and grace also. But yeah, so it will get better. I promise. This too will pass. Just if you can just stay alive till it does.
I have a question. Has there ever been a time in your life when you guys didn't agree on like ministry or what you wanted to do in ministry, like together as a couple? Or have you always been like, this is what we're called to do, and...
There probably been some, when we first got in ministry, yeah, there were, probably I was much, I was much more aggressive than Rita was in the sense of saying that we need to do this and really pushing her into a more prominent role. Rita didn't, you know, when we first, Rita was the good girl at her church.
There we go. Which he was a bad boy, I was a good guy.
I was a bad boy, I was a good con. She didn't know that when we started dating. She thought I was a good guy. Got her. But anyway, but she was the good girl in a traditional Church of Christ, which means she shows up, she doesn't do anything wrong, she just doesn't do a whole lot right in the sense of any active kind of thing. And so for her to start working with girls and discipling girls, and for her, she flunked one class in high school. You know what class it was?
That too.
No,
home ec. I did sew my sleeves in upside down.
Yeah, her first dress was a praise God dress. So, I think that was the first signs of her calling. She doesn't recognize that. My dress is upside down. No, not if you're Pentecostal. You know. It's perfect for them. But she was not at all feeling this call to communicate with women because she flunked public speaking because she refused. She did everything, wrote all the stuff, but would not make a speech. Why do you take public speaking if you won't take it?
Well,
they make you, okay? And so we would have discussions about me needing her to reach out to the ladies and teach them. I don't have to do that to please God. Mom, I'm not saying you have to, but what if God wanted you to?
I'll teach the babies.
Well, how would I know if God wants me to? I don't know. Maybe somebody close to you would give you that sort of advice that maybe you're needed. Or maybe, you know, maybe there would be ladies around that needed to teach. What do you think? Well, I don't know. Okay. I'm not saying you have to, but if you did sense God needed that, would you do it? And I knew she was the good girl. She's not going to go, sorry, God, she's going to funk the class, but she's not going to go to hell for that. You know what I mean? She's got that mentality. So, yeah, okay. It sounds kind of funny now, but I would turn over and she would be so distraught from me pushing her on that she would cry. And if you've heard Rita teach, you know that she's gifted as a teacher. She does an incredible job in teaching. And the world would have been robbed from that if I hadn't pushed her into that. I think Ephesians 5, sometimes we say, husbands, you can't change your wives, and wives, you can't change your husband. Well, nobody can change anybody, so we just give up on everything. But I do think if you look in Ephesians 5, what it says, that husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church, that he might present her to himself as a spotless bride, radiant without wrinkle. There's a transformation process that Christ has in the church, and that's the role he says as husbands, that are there. So I believe we have a role, not just me helping her, but I'm tons better because of her. So yeah, we've had a little, but generally speaking, I don't think there's been a major conflict. The first church, when it was a very traditional church, and I was not ready for it, probably, quite frankly, on a level of to handle it. You know, we grew more than they ever grew. We baptized more people than they ever baptized. We built a new church building while we were there in a town of 1,000. Church running about 40 or 50 when we got there. The average age about 64, and by when we left was running about 120, and the average age was about 40. You know, but it was a hard church. It was a hard, there was a very one that was very, there was a lot of criticism of me, and she took that very personally. And so it was hard for her, and I think that was the biggest conflict that we have, is the difficulty that's involved there. That's Clem's daughter, you can tell. So, what I guess, you know, with that, you pray about it, and you ask yourself, you know, like with Rita, she probably would have got out of ministry after Dongola, our first church, I think. It was just up to her. After our second church, I said, I won't do this again, but I wasn't wanting to get out of ministry. I said, if I have to starve. We went to our first church, we doubled in size or tripled in size, and again, we're talking in a town of 1,000, and so we're not talking, you know, fire rock, but we're talking going from 40 people to 100 people, 120 people in a town to where the church had never grown. And then the next church, the same thing happened in both cases. After we were growing, all of a sudden, the people who had been there running it for years, who had listened for a while, started thinking they knew what they were doing and would begin to go back, and they were going to destroy it. And so after this time, I'm like, I can't do that. I can't build something and then have them come in and just decide we're going to run it into the ground. I said, maybe I am the idiot, but right now there are too many bad people that I look out there and think they are. When you plan a church, you don't have a lot. If you blow it, you don't have anybody to blame. You look in the mirror and go, I was the idiot. You know, the village has been missing me. And you're it. And you know that. So With Rita, I think that you have to ask, getting out, am I doing it because I really don't think that I'm gifted for it and God doesn't want me to do it, or am I afraid? Because that was Rita's reason she would have got out. She was afraid of the hurt. She was afraid of the criticism. She was afraid of what it might do to our kids. And I would just say that probably to respond and to live your life on the basis of that fear will probably do more harm to you, to your marriage, and to your kids than the church ever will. In the back.
We have share time with in our small groups, and the kids are present for most of it. We just really had a hard time figuring out when our students are sharing, you know, pretty personal stuff and sometimes pretty, salacious stuff. You know, like at what age, like how do you even filter that? A, for confidentiality's sake, and B, for it's so hard to know what's okay. I don't want them to hide everything from them, but there's stuff my 7-year-old girl shouldn't hear yet, right? You know, and so it's so hard to know.
Yeah, you don't want to run up going, Jenny, I didn't know you was a hoe.
Yeah.
That can cause confidentiality problems.
Or even, you know, I don't for real. I don't know that I'm ready for my daughter to hear about sexual abuse yet.
I think they need to be protected. Right? One of the things that our groups usually, we would have our guy time and our girl time separate.
Right, we do that.
And so whenever I was in my guy time, you know, and often it wouldn't be at the same time.
Right.
Okay. I would be responsible for the kids, I got time with my kids to bond some and to do things with them. Rita also had complete access to where she didn't have to worry about any of that. And then whenever it was my guy time, she would have the kids, and I didn't have to worry about that. Sometimes we'd do it together, and then we'd put stuff in their room and say, go to your room and play. And when they are old enough at 2 or 3 to know, you can train them to go, listen, if you come down here, you're going to be in trouble. I love you. But we would say to our kids, the people that your mommy and daddy are working with, they really have some hurts, and we need to help them. And this is about our pleasing God. So I need you to help me with this. Whenever I would go to camp when my kids were young, I would always sit down with them and go, you know, whenever I see you, Carrie or Ashley, I remember at Dongola going, son, you make me want to stay home. But there are some little boys, a little bit older, young girls that don't have families like ours, and they're really messed up, and they need my help, and God needs me to go there. And I want you to understand that I'm going there because I love God, and they need help. Are you okay with that? And he'd cry to go, do you understand? But I was already letting him know that I'm not doing this because I want to leave you, but there's a sacrifice sometimes you have in helping people. And so very early on, they understood I wasn't just doing this because I like it. Mm-hmm. It's about service to God and others. And I think all those, that, you know, that's kind of that holistic kind of a thing, I think, that's there. That when you be communicating with your kids, I'm a talker.
Can you tell,
right? But when my kids, Reed will tell you the truth, is I was constantly using words of affirmation, and words of correction, but words of explanation, words of inspiration about who they would be when they were growing up. She's the nurturer, the cuddler, and the person who hugs them, and she talks too, but I think that helps with our kids. It not only helps them understand what we're doing, but as they get older, it makes it attractive to them also to want to do that also.
How do you know they're coming into that age where they can't start to hear some of the more difficult emotional stuff?
You know, what do you think?
Age?
Yeah, how do you know when they are?
I know it's not a number, but like what signs are you looking for? Like when did you know that you could trust, you know, Ashley to be in there and hear about some girls going through some really crazy stuff?
And again, probably
she was around it.
It was, there wouldn't be any specifics to probably she was in junior high or something like that was there. But we would teach them again all along as we tried to make sure that it didn't seem like we were just this legalistic, you follow God because you're going to go to. We wanted them to know that you follow God because John 10:10 says that he gives you an abundant life. And so we would talk even with their families when they'd come home, and they got exposed to those kinds of things, especially with other families. So when we would say things like that, then as people came around, like Renee, one of Ashley's big heroes, Renee had been through some horrible stuff. And so we would share little bits and pieces. Renee would share little bits and pieces. And all it did, but it was always in the context of their mommy and daddy, or they have people around them that don't love God, and so this happens. So again, what we're doing is we're building a hedge around them to where they're thinking it is not safe to live in an environment that's void of God.
We're trying to use a lot of teaching moments, honestly, for them.
Lots of teaching moments. Whenever the kid comes and he's crying because he saved up Christmas money to buy gifts, and his mom His dad sells his steals his money to go buy cocaine. After Marla to get out of the car, James, when we'd go pick him up with no lights on, we'd take him back at 9 o'clock, pick him up at 7 o'clock, no lights are on. They'd take him back, no lights on. You know why there's no lights on? Because they've got it shut off because their dad's an alcoholic. How's that? How do you think James feels? Why does he want to be at our house all along? Yeah. Listen, you know, when you don't listen to God, some bad things can happen to you. He didn't want it to happen. So a lot, like Rita said, a lot of teaching moments to where you get to show, again, you get to knock the shine off of sin. It doesn't glitter quite so much. And especially in comparison to a bright white Christian light.
So I have a question, a topic that comes up in mine and Sarah's talks a lot is, and you kind of answered a little bit, but like especially starting out in a marriage, balancing time between newlywed and ministry.
If you're like most newlyweds, you've got like 2 months and you won't want to be with each other anyway.
I mean, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Balancing time.
It's important. You know, I think we babysit on Friday nights. We keep all of our grandkids every Friday night. We try to.
Which is a lot easier now.
Yeah, it was pretty hard when they were all little, you know, but we keep them all 6 on Friday. And the reason we do that, number one, we want to, and we love them, and we want to be around them, and we want to be able to influence them. Number two, we know our kids, Ashley and Carrie and, you know, Hannah and RJ, they all work so hard in ministry. We know that to help their marriage be what it needs to be, that they need that night off. You know, they need that time to go on a date. And we found that out ourselves because there was a time in our ministry that I was feeling like I wasn't as important as ministry was to him, you know, that was more important. And we had a long talk at one point, and I was like, you know, you need to pay attention to me because I'm starting to wonder, you know, if you even care. And there's other people out here that show me this attention. So we had to kind of come up with a little code word.
And on my side, it was, you want me to be holding on all the time. When I'm here, you always have something to complain about. So if you want me to be around, complaining and griping is not the thing that draws me. It doesn't really turn me on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we had to come, but really with understanding, okay, so we would say, hey, I'm not feeling close.
Right.
That was kind of the code phrase for us to use to say, we need to do something. But I think you do a lot of stuff if you view your ministry as a partnership. And this is something, and I think this is something probably, again, with my vocalization that I may be better than Rita on this, but she'll tell you a lot of times, even when things are tough, I'll say, but Rita, you know, let's, you know, I've said this, if you or I were gone tomorrow, we would give everything that we own to have this hour in the car driving to help someone or to do something back together. You know what I mean? And you forget that. And I think it's important for you to live in a spirit of gratitude. So when we do things together, we're going away for, you know, when we leave here, we're going to go to Branson for 4 days. We've been married how many years? 38. I want to see if you got my
mind. Is that a question?
About 38 years. But we've been away, the longest we've been away ever together alone is 4 days. This will tie it when we go to Branson. But we do a lot of things together. You guys, I don't think most people who know us can think of Robert without thinking of Rita. And I think that most people who think of us, they think of Rita. And it may come out Robert and Rita usually, but if it comes out friends, it's Rita and Robert. It's inseparable. So make sure that you don't make ministry time a burden that it's not. You know, you're getting the, you know, why is it that whenever we're together and we go out with a couple when we're 17 years old to go see a movie, man, it's a double date and it's fun, but when it's ministry, all of a sudden it becomes a burden. That's just an outlook thing. And we've had to train ourselves to go, what are we griping about? We got to see a movie with people that we love. They're some of the closest people in the world. Yeah, that may have been ministry, but it felt a lot like a date. And so I think making sure that you keep your framework right, and then do make sure that you allot sometimes. You need to have this holy day or holy night where you say there's going to be one night a week. And for a while, you know, it was something for our people and staff. If they didn't get it, we'd put them on probation and say, listen, you either get that down to where you're getting a date night, or we're gonna let you go. Because quite frankly, marriage falling apart isn't going to help our ministry at all. So make sure that you protect that, and then you make sure that when you're together that you're making, that you're grateful for that time and you're enjoying the time. Don't let things that would be a blessing if it were under any other umbrella other than ministry become a burden. And then for the rest, just understand that's your purpose in life. And sometimes it's going to be busy, and sometimes it's going to be kind of crazy. It's just the way it is.
When we're at campus events, our focus is supposed to be on the guests that are there. As a married couple, how do y'all stay connected even at events like that when, you know, you may be, Miss Rita, you may be off in a corner talking to a girl, and Mr. Robert, you may be watching a basketball game with the guys. How do you stay connected and show the kids that example of a ministry marriage that works?
Have her bring food to me regularly. Like this time.
Brilliant!
Give me one of those dresses right. It's a praise shirt.
What if she's a vegetarian?
I think a lot of times, you know, we talk purpose a lot, and I don't know, you know, even after we're like in an event or whatever, our conversation on the way home is, how did it go with so-and-so? What did you do? What did you know, we talk about it all the time. Sometimes I think if we weren't talking about ministry, we wouldn't have a lot to talk about, you know, because we probably 90% of the time.
Men can always come up with one other topic to talk about.
Yes, exactly.
Never have to worry about that.
Oh my goodness. It always goes there, you notice that?
Yeah, and sometimes I do think that, like at events, even if you get together to friends that are in a secular world and you go to a party, you aren't joined at the hip. As a matter of fact, if you are, you're that couple.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so you have to, you know, you need to build your own social life and also your own skills with each other. And there's incredible rewarding friendships, you know. Some of the people that we've helped in their marriages, and you know, some of the people that are the most deeply, you know, have been the most deeply troubled people, have become Marie and I's best friends. You know, her friend Colleen, man, it's been a journey, and yet Reed and her are like sisters because they had that time. Bart and Tanya, we walked her through. You can't imagine the difficulties she's been through in her life, but we are, you know, we are super close with them. We're closer than their family. You know, I have a new MacBook Pro courtesy of Bart and Tanya. The reason Tanya wanted to get it, she just on Father's Day was feeling down, and she sent her dad some card, and she goes, "The man that feels more like a dad than my dad is Robert." And she said, Bart, I'm going to buy him something special. I had
waited
until
he was on drugs after surgery.
But again, that relationship with Rick, we are going to be gone at some point. It won't be us. And that's a traumatic thing for any couple. But one of the things that I think, I'm a thinker like that. Reed will tell you, you know, whenever Garth Brooks had his song come out years ago, If Tomorrow Never Comes, Rita heard that before I did. She said, "I have a song you need to listen to that you could have wrote." And so I think about that all the time. And one of the things that usually the man does go first, and one of the confidences that I have is that whenever I'm gone, both my kids and my church will take care of her. In a way that I can't when I can't. And I hope that's a short period of time, honestly, you know. But those relationships, when you have some independence, there's some preachers' wives, when the preacher dies, they are alone. And that's not going to happen with me. You know, if something happened to Carrie or Ashley, it wouldn't happen with them or Hannah or RJ. It wouldn't happen with us and them, but it wouldn't happen with our church. You guys know that. They would never have to worry about crying or living life alone. So some of that you go, oh, this busyness, God is protecting you and giving you a support system for some tough times.
What did y'all's family devotional times look like that you were sharing with your
family? They were awesome.
You know, we had, and again, some of them were awesome and some of them sucked.
You know
what I mean?
Awesome.
There were some that you're going,
oh, yeah,
Robert, wake up, you know. Wake up, you fell asleep in your devotion.
Some of them were awesome, though.
We prayed with our kids and sang a song every night. Probably about a third of the time we would have some, probably maybe more than a third to half the time we'd have some kind of lesson that was there. And then on Fridays we had a, you know, like a church service. No, but we would really, you know, and so we just do, you know, we'd tell stories, you know, we'd look at, hey, let's find out how people prayed and what positions they prayed in. They prayed with their hand flung up against the wall. They prayed out like this. They prayed on their knees lifting up. They prayed in a ball. So we would the next
that.
Week
we would
pray for the next week, pray in the positions they did and just ask God for things. And you're going, I'm hurting. Can I get out of this? You know? But again, it was something that made impact on them. We do devotionals with our grandkids that we come out and we try to, you know, either a lot of times we'll build it around maybe a show we've watched or a problem that we see them having. You don't have to stress a lot about, you know, your devotionals. I don't think. I think, you know, pray with them or not, sing a song, let them know that God loves them. Mm-hmm. Tell them a little story two or three times, but once a week, really invest some time and go, man, I want to make this special.
Still do family devotionals. We go on vacation together with all our kids and our grandkids once a year. And that's my favorite part of vacation. We can go to Disney. We can go to Universal. We can do all of that. But my favorite time is that, usually the Friday night, we have our devotional, and I just get to watch and talk, and I get to hear my grandkids, and when we're singing, I get to see them raising their hands and praising God. It's just, it's my favorite part of vacation, and I don't know.
And all of our grandkids like to sing, and about five of them can.
He only sings, it's just all hard rock.
I wasn't referring to that for today. We have one that maybe he's not old enough yet to know for sure if he's going to be able to sing or not.
Yes, he can.
Okay. He can make a joyful noise. And he may be able to. He's just not, we don't know. But guys, if you could honestly, one of the coolest things now when we'll do our devotionals at home, our kids sing out like you guys do when worship is rocking. Sometimes we just sit back and sing a song. And Hattie, who is how old? Seven?
Almost
7 years old right now, is picking up alto and can sing an alto part at seven, which is younger than Ashley did. Ashley's helped teach her, though, probably is why. But we were singing the other day, and I'm going, is that, who is doing the part? I look over at, and she's not on all the time, but there are times when that harmony came in with Reed, and I'm going, my goodness, that's, but they just sing, and it's amazing, and they love to do that. So every now and then, Reed will put up, you know, a Facebook, you know, you guys, if you look on her Facebook, you'll see, but every now and then. But it's just a part of what we do. And we try to build it into life. A lot of our stuff is in life. It's teaching moments going down the road.
Book. What's the book?
The Jesus Story Bible. You guys read that?
If you need to get that for your kids, if you don't
have
it.
Yeah, if you want a simple book to read to your little kids, I've used it on two or three occasions to read a story in the pulpit from. It takes the major stories from the Bible, tells them in a very simple way, but connects every one of them to Jesus. And is absolutely phenomenal to read. And sometimes, if you don't know much about the Bible yourselves, you read Bible stories to kids, you teach yourself to. We have a lot of parents who are going, man, I learn more than my kids. That's okay. Learn together. But your devotional time, we would always pray, we'd always sing, and we'd always have some kind of lesson. I'm trying to think right now some of the lessons we've done recently with them. You know, and what on Florida was the last time that the devotional went really well, and we talked about, you know, whenever you get, we're really, you know, we've got to have all this fun. So are you grateful? You know, and then we talked about, okay, guys, how does gratitude show up? If you're really grateful, how will God know if you're grateful? And they're able to go, well, he's going to show, it's going to show up in the way we act. And so I asked the question, then what, if you were grateful to God, what one thing would you work on that he would look and go, man, you're trying to change it. I know you really do appreciate me. And we went around the room, and so who, I think Malachi, he'd say, I need to stop lying. And all of them came up with something pretty different, but they didn't just say, I need to stop lying. It's like, I know I lie sometimes, and I know God isn't pleased, and if I was really grateful, I wouldn't do that. And I think Jackson, then Hattie, but they all came up with something, and even little Lincoln, I forget what his was, but he said it quietly, and Hannah said, Lincoln, go ahead and tell him. And he said something. Was it fighting with Gabriel? But it was something that was an absolute problem. But he was recognizing that. And so I said, so guys, vacation, if we're grateful for it, it's a gift from God. And I said, you guys, you have this family. And if it wasn't for God, Grammy and I would have been divorced. And you wouldn't have any of this. And the reason your mom and dad and your families are so cool is because of God. So while you're really thankful for Grammy and Papa and you hug us and you kiss us and your mom and dad, don't leave God out of that. So let's make sure that we allow a vacation to make us better when we get home. That's the kind of thing. Rita's awesome with them, taking them down on the beach and said she really, but it's, again, it's using Deuteronomy 6, when you lie down, when you rise up, when you walk around the road, using some moments that are there. When they get up, when we would drive to school, I was a huge talk radio guy, but when my kids were taken to school, the radio was off, and we're singing, and we're talking. When I pick them up, the radio is off. Well, how was school today? What happened? Did you reach out to anybody? Did anything, you know, that was good about that? And then before we would go to bed. So we might have a total of maybe 20 minutes in that, or maybe 30 minutes in that whole process. But that's 30 very intentional moments that are there. And then a general awareness the rest of the time we were with them. A lot of it, guys, is just choosing to be aware of the opportunity.
And you would do that with your students there, too?
Yes. Now, the devotionals, a lot of times, Rita said, there was a dentist and a dental student and his wife that we could, Rocky Lepardus and Lynn, was it Lynn? No, Rocky and Chris. And we couldn't get, they loved us. We could not get him into a Bible study no matter what. He would come every week to our cross chat. We called him Bible Talks back then. He would come every week and she would come and they loved it. And one night, the kids were coming down and they got to know Rocky and Carrie, you know, and Steph and Ashley were there. Carrie was probably in about seventh or eighth grade at that, sixth or seventh grade, and Ashley was probably, what, first grade or something like that, I think. Maybe a little younger than that even. But we were getting to go to the devotional. We said, hey, Rocky, you know, he may have asked, hey, can we told him he was going to have family devotional. And he said, I think he asked, hey, could we come up and see what that's like? And so he came up for that devotional that night. And then the next week he came back and he said, hey, can I stay for the family devotional? Mm-hmm. And it was after he came, two or three weeks after the family devotional, he started showing up at church all the time. And we asked him, he says, listen, Robert, I want to get together and start studying the Bible. And I'm like, cool, Rocky. And he asked me, and I said, you know, Rocky, what, it's really cool to see you. What's brought that on? He said, I was in, ever since we've been in your devotional, Chris and I talked about that's the kind of family that we want to have. So there's incredible power in that's in there. And we didn't, on our family night, we rarely let somebody invade that space. Now, it might have been some of Ashley's friend or Carrie's friends that were disenfranchised as, you know, their parents as they got older, but they were more a part of it as our family. But during the week, anybody that was there, if you were a minute, we got to put the kids to bed, we're going to sing a song with them, pray with them. If you want to come up and join us, you can. And it drew them in. It also taught them. We had a lot of parents now that do a lot of stuff that we did, not because we said, thou shalt do it, but they just go, man, they like the way our kids turned out. And they remember the process that was there. Anybody else? Does that have it covered? Guys, marriage and ministry is a balancing act. Never think that life without ministry isn't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think that this is the only world that it's tough, and it's not. Look at the divorce rate in our culture. And a lot of times we blame ministry and we blame the church for our own failures as parents in raising our kids and husband and wife in keeping each other close. I understand there's a tension. I've been a part of that for almost 40 years now. There is a tension, and you've got to keep that tension. You can't, but you don't live in this world without there being tension. Just make sure that you again, keep a night for your spouse, for your family, and really give time. Then during the times that you're together, enjoy those times as you go here and there, and you get to do a job together, whereas normally you'd be going to work for 40 hours, then you'd be driving your kids crazy. You wouldn't get to see each other, and sometimes we can just forget how much we, Rita and I may not have an official date this week, but we'll go out for lunch or dinner by ourselves, together or with somebody else, three or four times this week. It's only in ministry that we go, oh, we didn't get any time together. No, quite frankly, because we discussed something, that doesn't mean we didn't get time together. And enjoy. It's an life. The older you get, the more you get to look back and go, it's been a good life, and we've been able to bless people. We've been able to see some good things happen. And with having grandkids again, the most awesome thing for me is getting to see, And again, they're not old enough to know this for sure. Jackson and Kennedy are our oldest ones. If you know anything about Kennedy, you know that she has a high level of devotion to God. And Jackson is developing that. They are absolutely different people. Kennedy is naturally brilliant. Jackson struggles at school. Jackson is naturally social. Kennedy can struggle sometimes in social situations. It's phenomenal the difference that are there, but both of them understand at the center of their life is not their giftedness or their lack of giftedness. At the center of their life is the purposes of God. And that has a way to bring value into their lives, especially when you have very intentional parents reminding them. And grandparents, too. Like, you know, we both have a very acute awareness. We'll see a need in one of them. A couple of 3 years ago, Jackson Kennedy did everything so well. I told Rita, I'm really concerned. Jackson seems to be really doubting himself. And so I want to make sure that I'm investing in him. And he's not the only one I've done that with, but this was just one that, and you could see. So I intentionally started building him up and highlighting him. Rita is phenomenal at this natural. She has this ability to look at something that he draws, and I'm going, what is it? And she's like, that's so good. And I don't think it's she's lying. I think she's just knows how it's going to progress. I'm just not sure, you know. But, you know, I'm good in other areas, but she's great with that kind of thing. So the more affirmation, the more people you can get. If you don't have grandparents like us, get a grandparent in the church.
Yep.
Say, help be my grandma. All right, we're going to pray unless there's another question. All right, let's bow. Father, thank you for the couples that are in here tonight, Father. And I know I don't want to trivialize or minimize the struggle that you can have in ministry. But Father, so much of it, I think, comes from our lack of appreciation of getting to be together, that we allow a blessing to turn into a burden. And Father, so help us to refocus and, Father, to change the way that we think to where we're together and where we're people that we love, that it's not ministry the burden, but it's relationships that's a blessing that we get people to do life with. And Father, and the things that when it is tough and we're pulled away and we don't get to be together, help us to understand that we're investing in something that matters. And that, Father, you have promised if we seek you first, God, that we're going to be protected by you. Help us to remember the importance of loving our mates, expressing that with words, expressing that with actions, to where when we're not together, they know it's not because we want to be apart, but because we can't be together maybe right now. And so there's this longing that they know, man, I want to be with you too. Father, help us to be husbands and wives that are attractive to our kids. Help our families to be those that are attractive to the world. And Father, help us to be people that know that in our lives that we have been a blessing to you and to others, Father. Again, thank you for allowing us to have marriages that matter. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.